Well, the world is a dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right, and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got the prolific, the amazing, the wonderful, the charming, Andy Reid. Welcome to Season 4, Episode 101. Let me tell you something. I missed you terribly. And I have to apologize for being gone for so long. It was completely on me. It had nothing to do with you. See, I had a lot of things going on in my life, and I really thought that I didn't have it in me to maintain this relationship as well as my other relationships. But I'm a big man. I can admit it. I was wrong. I need you. Come back to me. Now, because we're able to be so honest with each other, I'm going to be honest with you. I had a really rough year, and getting through those episodes in the last season was actually really, really tough. And the year that came after was even harder. There was a lot of personal growth that had to happen. And instead of being bummed out by that, I'm actually really excited about that. You see, no matter how many of these conversations I have with people who are experts on things and smarter than me about things, one of the things that is consistent with me is that I take in new information, I'm better than I was before, and I feel like I've done it, and there's nothing more to do. I have hit my plateau. I am awesome. I've got it all figured out. My mental health is at the highest peak that it's going to get. I've learned how to manage things. I haven't tried to kill myself in forever. That must mean I'm doing great. And you know what? Honestly, in a lot of ways, it does mean I'm doing great. But what it doesn't mean is that I'm done. Because you can always be better. There's a way to be better all the time. And that is not a source of sadness. That is a source of joy. It's the fountain of youth right there. It is everything to be able to take a look at your circumstances and know that there is so much more out there for you. To know that there is an infinite space of growth and change out in the world, just waiting for you to discover it. Something that can change you all the way to your core. The way that you think, the way that you behave, the way that you approach other people, the way that you approach the things that you've been doing your whole life can change. The very idea that moments are fleeting and that problems are temporary, even the worst pain isn't something that you should shy away from, but something you should live in the moment, because when it ends, it's going to change the way you are moving forward. And you have a lot of choices in what directions you're going to go, and you can take some really dirty, gnarly roads, and then choose to take some different ones. We're going to get into a lot of that stuff this season. But for right now, let's get into this conversation with the great Andy Reid. A year to the day since my last episode.
Oh, wow. Jeez, dude. Okay. Well, yeah. That's cool. Well, when is this, when are you going to be launching your next season?
Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Great. Awesome. Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's, well, that's exciting.
You know, I mean, let's just dive right in talking about me for a minute. So this is kind of an interesting thing. I don't know about, coincidences and things like that. I'm not so much of a believer in notes from the universe or things like that, but every now and again, you get these nudges that sort of remind you of where you should be. And it's really funny because I've had all of these various, circumstances popping up that have let me know that the podcast is really something I should be paying some attention to.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's been one of the greatest creative endeavors I've embarked upon, and I've gotten some feedback. There are people who are still finding it. Mm-hmm. So as of yesterday, I decided, you know, I really need to get moving on this. I've been kind of waffling on where I need to be as a person. And mm-hmm. the podcast has always kind of put me in a good space in talking to other people. It's made me feel a lot better about myself.
That's awesome, man. That's what it should be. Honestly, like that this is great fuel for me too right now as I'm like trying to get something like this going, you know?
Yeah, and it's amazing. The conversations that you have with, like, I don't know another time because I make time to do this, but as far as getting mm-hmm. getting together with people and talking, it's not something I'm good at. I wrap myself into projects and I'm always recording or shooting something or editing something. I'm just always in the middle of it because I've got to be filling this voracious hole.
Right. No, I understand. I get it.
So tell me about what you're doing right now, because you have been incredibly busy.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like the recording producing thing for me, which has become my career, has been going for about 15 years. And of course, just like anything, it started off a couple days a week and it kind of turned into, you know, a 6 day a week thing. So I can't complain on that front. Luckily, I get to work with some amazing people like yourself, and you know, you and I go way back to the banana convention days, so we've worked on previous stuff together, and it's just kind of become this thing where it's like you work with someone and then another artist hears that record and says, hey, I really like that, what was it like working with Andy? And they say, oh, it was great. So it's been 100% word of mouth snowball effect.
So to sit
here and at this point, you know, 15 years ago, I would have said, you're crazy. I would never be able to pull this off. But so I'm lucky in that regard. So, but I do spend a lot of time, you know, I'm pretty much obsessed with audio at this point. So I'm studying at night, listening to other engineer podcasts and just, you know, you get to a point where it's just like, you can only kind of go one more yard at a time, you know, like that kind of thing. But you always want that extra yard, you know, it's like, what can I do to get that extra yard? And so that's been great. So musically, you know, I used to play a lot live. I kind of quit doing that once my daughter was born. I was actually in the band The Verve Pipe as the touring bass player from like 2009 to 2013.
Yeah.
And then when my daughter was born, and I wasn't doing it for financial reasons at all because the studio was kind of already its thing, you know, and that's where my heart really was. But it was great to, my best friend is the drummer, so we got to kind of travel together and see a lot of cool places, and it was an amazing experience. But
the great Donnie Brown.
The great Donnie Brown. Yes. So once my daughter was born, you know, I tried it a little bit. I decided I didn't want to be away and miss anything. So I left that and I kind of play out here and there, nothing major, because I have some health issues too that kind of affect me from performing a lot. Like I have a neck issue that, it, you know, it puts me down for about a day if I play a show. So I have to do it sparingly. I miss it and I love doing it still, but my heart has always been in the record making side of things. Like, I feel like that's where the magic happens for me. It's the creative process. And I've never been like a really strong player. Like, I'm okay. I understand that I'm okay. And I'm not doing the old self-deprecation thing. It's like, I'm good. I know I'm okay. I've gotten some good gigs and, you know, I know that. But I'm not like great where people are like, oh, you got to play out. You got to play out, that kind of thing. So it's like no one's like beating down my door to book an Andy Reid show, which is fine. And I've accepted that, you know, I've really accepted that. But that's not going to stop me from making records and playing live because I enjoy it. You know, I just did a White's show, a solo gig at White's, which, you know, well, Saginaw, it's kind of like our home base. And, you know, Bo White showed up and it was like one of the most heartwarming shows I've ever done. And there was like 20 people there. Monty was there and his wife. And it was awesome. It was everything that you would hoped it would be. And even though there was only 20 people there, but they were the right 20 people. You know what I mean? So,
exactly.
So music pretty much still runs my daily life, you know, mostly recording and producing others and doing some mix jobs and mastering. That's the thing. And thankfully, I still enjoy it every day because I like that you never know what's going to happen kind of thing. I don't know much about, I'm not really big into the universe thing, but my wife is really into astrology. She's like, oh, that's because you're a Gemini and you need change every day. I'm like, well, okay, if you say so, but I do like the unpredictability of everything. And, so that's in a nutshell, pretty much what I've been doing, still writing and recording my own music and, working with other people on their records.
Well, what was the first recording experience that you've had, like at all?
Well, the
cassette tape in a jam box in a band room at, you know, 15 or something. What was your very first recording experience?
Well, my first recording experience was like purchasing let me rewind that because it's funny because I'm actually mixing this record that I'm about to talk about because they never finished it. But my cousin Danny was in a band called Acoustic Fields, and this would probably be about 1995.
Yes.
And they were working on their second record. And at this point, I was a music fan. I still didn't play any instruments or anything, but I mean, it still ruled my life. I loved listening to music and I loved following his band around. So he took me to the studio with him and I watched them record a couple songs and it was like, holy cow, this is amazing. So because of that experience, I wanted to learn how to play guitar and I bought a guitar at 18 years old. And then, you know, of course I can't play well, so I can't play anybody else's songs. Well, I'm like, screw it. I'll just write my own songs.
You know?
So kind of out of like, you know, the only way I could play anything was to write my own thing. And they were horrible, which is what they should be. But, I bought a 4-track cassette deck thing. And that would be my first kind of, go at it was that. And my first like proper making a record would have been with my band, the Haskells, which would have been about 3 years later. And we made a record with Brendan Benson of Raconteur fame down in Detroit before he and Jack moved to Nashville. Brendan actually had in this house, this beautiful old mansion on East Grand Boulevard, about a mile away from the Motown Museum. He had an MCI one inch 8-track tape machine.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And we had gotten signed to this little indie label, and they gave us like $4,000 to make a record. They're like, "Well, where do you want to go?" And we're like, "We want to go record with Brendan because he said he would do it." You know, and we were big fans. And so that experience was I got to see like a mad genius at work. You know, there are no rules here. Like, and thankfully we were open-minded to it because we weren't one of those bands that's like, okay, well, we've been playing it this way for 5 years, so therefore that's how we have to record it. We were like, let's just jack this up as much as possible. So Brendan was perfect in that regard, super creative, you know, just, well, why do you want to play that bit on guitar? Let's grab this keyboard over here. Let's play it on that. You know, just throwing ideas out. And then I got to witness like how the creative process is injected inside the recording studio.
Yeah.
And then it was that was the hook for me. You know, that was it. I was done. And I was all in after that. And yeah, so those were my two kind of aha moments. And I appreciate being young and naive and at least having my eyes and ears open enough to realize that the possibilities are endless like that, you know?
Yeah.
There was a time when you're younger where you're like, you know, your shit doesn't stink kind of thing. And it's like, I watch a guy like Brendan do this. It's like, oh man, I am not even close to this caliber. You know,
I've had several moments like that in my life where, you know, I feel like I'm doing really great. And then I show up to somewhere with all of these amazing people. And I feel like, you know, they're all painting Rembrandts and I got this beautiful crayon drawing and a Denny's placemat.
Exactly. But that's cool because it drives you to be better. I mean, because we're never going to be as good as we want to be, but the process is what's important. You know, it's like, it's that 1 yard at a time thing. I sent a new track to a friend of mine who's a very established engineer, and you know, he's a hero to me and he's kind of become a mentor. And I sent it to him. I'm like, hey, I released a shitty new song today, but hopefully it's not as shitty as the last one I did, or it's less shitty. As he's like, that's the spirit, you know, like, so it's just, you gotta just, you know, chip away at it and hope you can improve a little bit each day and do a little bit better than the last time you did something. At least that's the way I try to approach it anyway, because you know, you can set yourself lofty goals and unrealistic goals. And like you said, sometimes you sit there and chip away at it and you can almost hurt the piece of art more than doing the right thing for it, you know, by overcooking it or whatever. And, you know, it's like, you got to know when to let go and say, okay, this is as good as I can do right now. So therefore it is good enough. So,
but getting to that place, just even as a person, how do you get to a place of being able to trust yourself with pushing through when the negativity comes in?
Yeah, that's a tough one because it's so easy to get, well, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if it's experience. Honestly, like the short answer might just be experience and just doing it enough to like being able to block out those inner voices and stuff like that. Because, you know, imposter syndrome, I don't know about you, but that's a real thing with me. Like I have a lot of colleagues and stuff that I chat with and confer with and stuff. And they have, you know, 5-6 Grammys. Not that that means anything, but that just also means that they're very well respected in the industry by other people, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't even belong at this dinner table, you know?
Right.
That's the way I see it sometimes. But then they make you feel like you do belong at the dinner table. It's like, you know, one person said, Andy, you know, what you're working on with your local artists is just as important as the record I'm working on with this major label budget.
Yeah.
Because it's art and it's what that person wants to do and it's what they're trying to say. You know, it might not get as many listens or Spotify streams or whatever. It doesn't matter. It is just as important as this record. And I remember that going, hearing that and going, wow, that's such an awesome thing to hear from someone who's been through it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So having some friends and some colleagues kind of help me through that imposter syndrome process has definitely helped my confidence level. And I think confidence and experience are those things that are going to help you get past those areas where you're like, you know, just need to let this go. You know, this is good for now. I'm really happy with it. It's a moment in time. You know, like I said, I just released a single 2 days ago. It's like, okay, that's an Andy Reid music artist from August of 2021. And so when I look back at it 3 years later, I'll be like, that's where I was at that time.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. You know, it's audio or music and records are just frozen moments in time. And you, even now, like if I went back and made that record with Brendan Benson now at, you know, 20 years later, it would be a completely different album, obviously, you know?
Well, yeah, you're a completely different person.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, but that would be bad, I think, because now I have that time capsule from 20 years ago that I can appreciate and enjoy. And it's like, oh man, I sung horrible on that, but man, we had fun, you know,
yeah.
It's like, it was so much fun. So, I think that you just have to learn how to, you know, put yourself in a mindset that this is where you are at this moment. And that's good enough. And you put your art out into the world, and then you move on and work on the next thing and try to make it a little bit better if you can. Otherwise, you're just going to get stuck on the same thing forever, you know?
Right. It is interesting the way that a lot of these older things that you could look back on and see as maybe technically not as good in a lot of ways can actually bring forth a whole lot of perspective on the growth that you've had as a person. Like I listen back to a lot of the old stuff, and I'm so lucky to have a document from that time in my life. Like you mentioned recording in Detroit. One of my first instances of recording with somebody, you know, bigger than the guy down the street. Was also
Jim
in Detroit.
Diamond.
Jim Diamond. Yeah, that's
Jim,
right.
Yeah,
that
no,
was
I know that.
A fabulous experience. But at the same time, the band was in a very precarious place at that time. And that's what
I
remember. I remember that I was, I had left the band to go do some punk rock thing. And then I came back because I was a better fit than the other drummer. That they replaced me with. I was just a better fit. And overall, it was a better place for me to be. And I really did enjoy being in the band. But we were all still kind of circling around each other. There was a lot of tension and there was fighting. And it was funny because we were a bubblegum pop band and it was just so much chaos and fighting. And I remember we're in the studio and we're trying to get these gang vocals recorded where everybody's clapping and doing backup vocals at the same time. And it bursts out into a screaming match that almost turned into a brawl. And the only thing I could think to do was just drop my pants and say, are we going to record this or what? I just took my pants down to the floor and I asked if we were going to record, and everybody started laughing, and it was like, okay, yeah, let's get to work. And
I have never heard this story, and I know everyone in your band,
yes.
And this is amazing to me, by the way. So just keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic experience. It changed the tenor of the day. And it actually kind of made us remember, oh yeah, we do all like each other. We are all here for a common goal. And there is something there is something kind of wonderful about that, to think back on the person that I was at that time, because I could be completely miserable. and touring with the band in the beginning, my whole thing with touring was I'm going to isolate into a corner of the van and read a book. And I have no interest in jamming along to whatever music is playing or smoking pot or any of that. I had no interest in it. I just wanted to, like, I wanted to get to the show. I wanted to slay the show, and I wanted to go to wherever we were going to sleep, either staying in the van or I was miserable to be around. I was no fun at all those first few times.
I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, it's like, because like you said, when I was in the Verve Pipe, that's totally how our drives were. Everybody was in their own place.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just the way to cope with it, so you can enjoy the other people so they don't drive you nuts for 3 weeks or whatever. You know, it's like you need your alone time, and this is the only way I can get my alone time away from you, yahoos, right now, is just if I just kind of isolate myself. But you know,
well, it'll certainly keep you out of trouble.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And you were a little bit older too than everyone else, weren't you? Was that a factor in that?
That was definitely a factor. Yeah. Because I had already kind of, I had already kind of struck out with my old band Smiley Face, and we made a go of it, and it failed. Well, I shouldn't say it failed, but that's how I felt at the time. I felt I was in this kind of popular local punk band that fell apart, and it could have been something. We had all of these close calls, with contact from producers and things like that. Close calls that never amounted to anything because we destroyed ourselves. It was just, we had no idea what we were doing. And
so maybe your isolation was part defense mechanism too from that happening again,
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was all business. It's like we're here to make the best music we can make, and we're here to put on the best show we can put on. And all of this other stuff, I had a big issue, and it was, moral outrage, some kind of you would swear I was spraying holy water on people and waving a Bible around because it was just like, I don't care how fucked up everybody gets after the show, but before the show, people would be drinking a beer and I would just be sneering at them.
Yeah.
And there is a middle ground. And there is a way to just relax, absolutely. Man. Just relax. But I didn't know how to relax because I couldn't relax anywhere in my life. And I had this misplaced feeling that I needed the band to save my life because everything else was chaos everywhere else. And so I was putting that pressure on everyone else.
Right.
Like, don't you know how important this is to me? But I never said that to them. I never expressed that to them. And later I was able to actually go through and, become part of the process that was, fun and be an enjoyable person to be around. But tell me a little bit about that. I mean, as far as the joining the Verve Pipe, that had to be kind of an interesting situation because they certainly had a moment of being way more high profile than I think they expected to be.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then,
it
did what it did. They weren't necessarily a one-hit wonder, but they were definitely a band that had a moment that was giant, and then it shrank a little bit. But they were still able to tour and go places. And so, tell me a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I kind of first started getting into music and doing the Haskell thing is when I kind of became friends with Donnie because he's a Saginaw guy.
Yeah.
And, just over this geeky love for the Beatles, we just kind of became buddies. And so I was kind of always had a kind of a backseat view of that whole thing, and it was fun. It was fun to see people, have that moment, like you said.
Yeah.
So when they finished their, I've been seeing a lot of September 11 stuff. So the last major label record they did was released on September 11th, 2001. And that pretty much summed up where they were on that career. Like, it didn't, you know, it was like the nail in the coffin at that moment. Yeah. And, you know, people were leaving the band. And but the mainstay was always Brian, the lead singer, and Donnie, the drummer. They were kind of the primary songwriters and that. So they kind of hung on to it as long as they could. And, you know, the first kind of that 10 years from like 2001 to 2010, you know, they would just do like greatest hit shows here and there in Michigan and festivals or whatever.
Yeah.
So they got approached by, I think it was Meyer to do like, Meyer was doing like this compilation, like family album, like kids songs. And they were like, well, hey, you know, our fans at this point, 10 years later, probably have kids. This is a good idea to try to do something like this. And, you know, there are really great, successful rock bands that have ventured into that family album thing. Like They Might Be Giants and Casper Baby Pants, which is the guy from Presidency of the United States.
Yeah. Yeah.
And So they're like, hey, this might be a fun thing to do. And so they started making like a family album, which is essentially was just like rock and roll, almost like The Simpsons. It's a cartoon, but it could still be for adults, but it's still kind of like kid friendly enough to be for kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of shot the band in the arm a little bit. And they were getting like festival invites to go do like a family show during the day and then a rock show at night, you know? So it's like you get like two things for it. So that's when about I joined. And so there was this little injection of momentum there where we were selling lots of merchandise, lots of kids t-shirts, and also doing the rock show. You were kind of getting it, which was, it's funny enough, I actually liked the kids shows more because you could just be a silly goofball. You don't have to put the rock face on and stand there with your legs apart. And, you know, like, you know, it's like you got to be serious playing these dark songs and whatever. But but so they were fun. And so I really enjoyed it a lot in that regard, too. So performing was just a blast with that band. And so that was like a little bit of a surge back into being busy again for them. And we did two kids records, which both did really well, got on the Sirius radio. We were doing interviews in New York City, playing live on Sirius XM, stuff like that. It was really a nice moment. It probably was like their second surge. It wasn't as big as the first surge, obviously, because that was like a number one hit on like top 40 radio. Well, that's not going to happen again with the band in their, you know, 40s and 50s. So,
right.
But this kid thing was like a nice avenue, and it was honest. Like, it was legit. Like, everybody had kids and it was just like a fun thing to do. So I enjoyed it immensely. But then we started making a rock album again, which would have been their first one since 2001. And then it kind of all came back. It was like the fighting over who's going to get songs on it, and the business side took over again.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, this isn't very much fun here. And, you know, I'm doing my bass parts here at my studio and the drummer's doing his drum tracks at home. There was no group interaction whatsoever. It was just like very stagnant and stale, a stale way to make a record. And, you know, I just, like I said, I just didn't enjoy it. And the record kind of reflects that, in my opinion. You know, it's not, you know, here I am, like, finally on a Verve-type rock album, and I can't even listen to it, you know? But it was a great experience. You know, I got to play things like Austin City Limits, which was great, because what we would do is, you know, you would go there and play one day and then you get to hang out for the other 2 days and watch the other bands, you know? And so that was awesome. I took my tour money from one tour and flew my wife out for the weekend, and she got to hang with us and for that whole experience. So yeah, it was nice to get the nice catering and right on the coattails of something that wasn't really a part of.
Yeah.
But there was a nice moment at one of our shows, and I can't remember where it was, but we were kind of doing the autograph thing after the show. And someone was handing around the Villains record, which was their big album from 97.
Yeah.
And they went for me to sign it. And I'm like, oh, you know, I didn't play on this record, you know. But the lady said, well, but you were here at this moment playing these songs, so I want your autograph on it. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. That makes me feel a little more like a value. Like we had this live musical moment together, and that's what she wants to remember, rather than, is that the guy that was on that record? You know, that kind of thing. So that changed my perspective a little bit and made me feel more comfortable in that position as a band member rather than just a hired gun, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense.
Yeah, so overall it was amazing, you know, and the fact that I didn't have a ton of stock in the band like the original members did, I was able to, you know, just say, hey, thank you for the experience. You know, I have this little girl now and I'm going to focus my time here. And it was a nice clean break and nobody was mad or upset. And, you know, it was easily replaceable, you know. I'm grateful it happened. I'm very thankful it happened. And I just kind of one of those, I forgot to tell you this story because this was just another, I tell this story a lot about when doors open, you have to be ready to take advantage of those opportunities. Well,
yeah.
In 2009, before I joined the band, their bass player couldn't do a tour. And I got a call a day before the tour. And they were like, dude, we need you to bail us out. We're in trouble here. We have 2 weeks, East Coast kind of thing. And so I'm like, well, I don't know any of the songs. So I'm literally in the van on the way out to Philadelphia, learning the songs on bass with my iPod and just writing charts. And then I went and did the gig. I did 2 weeks tour and that was kind of like, okay, you want to be in the band? That was it. That was my audition. But it's like, had I not been, you know, I was scared shitless, of course. It's like, yeah. I don't want to be the guy that sucks up there, you know?
Right.
But had I not taken advantage of that opportunity, you know, I wouldn't have had the rest of those experiences. So that was a good lesson for me too, to just take advantage of those opportunities and not be afraid to dive in. And, you know, if I would have fallen flat on my face, you know, at least I helped them get through that tour and that would have been the end of it. But it turned into so many other things after that.
Have you always been good at moving forward, even though you're afraid?
I think so. I mean, that's a good question. Yeah, I think fear is another thing that kind of gradually diminishes over time, you know, with confidence.
Like,
I met this guy named Mike Viola, who's a pretty established producer, songwriter. He was the guy that sang That Thing You Do. Like, that's his voice in the movie.
Yeah.
And so he's been an LA guy. He's always, his music was always like, you know, he's like up there with like the Beatles to me.
Yeah.
And I sent him a record of mine and he's like, man, I love this record. We should do a show together. And I'm like, wait, so I have to like sing next to you, you know, that kind of thing. But it's like, you know what? Screw it. Let's do it. You know? And that turned out to be one of the best shows I've ever had. And so, yeah, I think fear is, you know, I know that because anyway, this guy has a killer voice. So it's like, singing's one of my weaker points, I should add. I'm confident with it. I know what it is, but it's like, okay, but my songs are okay. So that's kind of like my thing, you know? So it's like, I have to have that confidence knowing my strengths and weaknesses so I can go up on stage with this guy who's going to out-sing me all night. You know what I mean? So just like I said, it's sitting at that table and wondering if you really belong there. But if you're invited to that table from people that you respect and admire, then that has to say everything you need it to be. You know, it's like that should give you the confidence right there, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Well,
so
but that's a thing to remember is that, you know, with music, it's not necessarily a competition because you're not really kind of beating each other. It's like you think about people who have great voices, but you also think about people who have a great voice for what they're doing. You think of like a right. Tom Waits or an Elvis Costello, not necessarily conventional, but absolutely beautiful for what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So yeah, I'd say, I think it's just like, you gotta, you know where your strengths and weaknesses are and try to develop those as much as you can. But you also kind of have to accept them. It's like, I can't go up on stage with a guy like that and try to like push and sing as hard as I can because he can do it, yeah. Which a lot of people would try to do, you know, like you would try to do that to kind of like be on that level. It's like, I know I can't do that. So I just got to do what I do and do the best I can. And like I said, I think that's just something that you build up over time as well. But that invitation from them to be on stage with them, that's the validation right there. You know, that's the thing that should make you get over those fears. And sometimes it's hard, sometimes it isn't, but just, I think that, you know, being invited to that table means a lot, you know, and I've learned to process that as like, okay, they're treating me like an equal, even though in my mind, it's not even close. You know what I mean? So I have to do what I do and just do the best that I can do. And that's good enough. Otherwise, they wouldn't have invited you, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, and honestly, getting to the place where you figure out what is the absolute worst that can happen, because there is no growth without discomfort. You can't Absolutely. Get better at anything without first being unfamiliar with it. I mean, not even necessarily Yeah. bad, because there might be things you take to pretty quickly, but that's still not the same as having a natural ability. I mean, you might have a natural openness to something, but ability comes only through action. There's not really Right. any such thing as natural ability. Everybody has the ability No. to do everything. It's just to what degree are you going to direct your interest toward getting better at something?
Right. Yeah. And that's such a great point. I'm reading this book. What is it? The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, I think is the name of it.
Yeah.
And it talks exactly about that. It's like, you're an average person. I'm an average person. But the people that truly do great things, they pick something they love, their passion, and then they dedicate their whole being to that thing.
Right.
Then they develop that skill and get better at it and better at it and better at it. Yeah, it's like, you know, like recording. I just loved that thing. And if I listen to a mix now from 2021 versus a mix in 2001, it's like there's no contest.
Yeah.
But that's not saying that the 2001 thing is horrible. You know, I still am proud of that thing because it is a part of that growth process and that journey's been amazing. But yeah, it's funny that you say that because it's such a, I'm just, like I said, I'm reading this book right now that explains that entire thing about, there's a quote by Brian Wilson too, that I just absolutely love. It's like, you know, people call him a genius all the time. He's like, I'm not a genius. I'm just a hardworking guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, what a great thing for Brian Wilson to say, because I think he's a genius, you know, but
yeah,
there's a guy that just like went for it and took chances and improved and improved and improved. And then, you know, he's Brian Wilson, for crying out loud. So yeah, it's pretty humbling when guys like that say things like that. When
it's, well, how do you listen to Smile and not have your brain melt?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's no. So many layers and so many decisions that would just be completely out there. But that's also something Right. that you've got to have your arms open instead of crossed to catch.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where the growth comes from, is really mm-hmm. honestly in listening. And that's a good thing about being a musician. If you really want to spend your life around music, you do spend your time listening.
Yeah. Listening is everything, man.
Absolutely.
Honestly,
like everything.
That's your education. it really is. And like being in the room with a bunch of musicians, you know, the drummer could be like humming this little idea and just not have the guts to say something.
Right.
And I'll be like, dude, what were you just humming right there? What were you just humming that? You know, grab a guitar. That's a great idea. You know, it's like you have to have your ears open to see what moments can happen. And if, you know, then the next time around, the drummer might be a little more confident bringing his in, you know. So if you have five people in the room, the way I see it, it's like, it doesn't matter if the drummer has the best idea for the guitar part or the guitar part has the best idea for the drummer. Whatever the best idea is, and of course that's subjective as well, but when we're working on a song, something that a moment happens, I don't care who comes up with it. Honestly, like, I've come up with ideas all the time and then someone will take that idea and make it better. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. You know, it's like, you gotta, and that's another thing that's huge is ego. You know, it's like, you gotta check your ego at the door. And, but you also have to have a little bit of that ego to get your ideas out there enough to, so people will hear them, you know? So it's that balance that you talked about earlier too. You know, it's like, you gotta, how do you know when to say something? How do you know when to shut up? How do you know when to, you know, bring in your thoughts and stuff? But I find that the best records that I've ever been a part of are the ones that are just, the communication lines are wide open, you know?
Well, and this kind of creativity can come at a cost, right? Because if you're a person who feels things so deeply, that can go south on you sometimes and take you to some places that might not be great. So as far as that's concerned, with all of the search for exceptionalism or getting better or things like that, how do you deal with the frustration of it? What does that look like to you? Do you find yourself like in an emotional hole that's hard to get out of, or because I know that we have some similarities in that certain things can make us feel a certain way, and it can almost get away from you a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the dealing with the frustrations that come with this, for me, being, I almost consider it like, you know, I'm like in AAA and there's like the big leagues, and I've been kind of living in AAA for whatever.
Yeah.
And once in a while I'll work with someone that's a big leaguer, and that's just a, you know, I got called up for a few days kind of thing, and then I get sent back down. But I'm still playing every day, and that's what's important too. So the frustration part for me is mostly because, like anything, you know, you come from this area, so you know how rich the talent is.
Yeah.
And the music scene is, and the artists, and, you know, we have Aaron Johnsons, and we have Ray Torres's, and we have Amy Petty's, and just all these amazing artists. And it's like, the frustration part for me is like, why can't the world hear this? Why isn't this like what's on people's radios? Obviously.
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest thing for me. And getting past that is a lot harder for me sometimes, especially when you're a part of something really spectacular. Like, I made this record with this artist named Amy Petty a couple years ago, and she's a world-class talent. I mean, she can, her voice, her songwriting, it's all there. Like, there's no weaknesses. And we made this ridiculous creative album, and it's like, you know, she needs to be on a bill with Brandi Carlile, in my mind. You know, that's where she should be. So you see stuff like that, but then when you talk to Amy, you know, she's just so proud we made that record and that it's out there, and that she, working with people, they can kind of check you back to where it's like almost like you want them to be more successful than they want, you know?
Yeah.
And so when you have a lot of friends kind of checking you and kind of putting you back, like, why are you doing this? What's the main reason you do what you do? It's like, well, it's to make music with my friends, you know, like, that's the main reason. And they're like, well, are you doing that? I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that. It's like, well, then you're all set. It's like, I know, but it's fun to bitch sometimes. And the music business is such a different thing than the music making process. They're two completely different things.
Yeah. Completely.
And I'm horrible at the business thing, man. I'm just horrible at it. And I don't know if 'cause I've given up, but, you know, we'll have moments like the Legal Matters this recording band that I'm in, and we got our second album got picked up by Omnivore.
Yeah.
Which is a bigger indie label out of Los Angeles. And it's like, what? what, really? They want to do this? Are you sure? You know, like you start second guessing yourself. And, but then again, you know, we sold, you know, 1500, 2000 records, which was great for us.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, that's nothing, you know, as far as like a successful band. So it's like, you just got to take those wins when you get them and work towards those. Cause once in a while, you know, like I said, those little doors and avenues open up and you got to be ready to jump through them and just ride that wave the best you can. I mean, I don't know how else to say it other than like, you know, it's going to be frustrating when we made this third record, which is even better than our second album. And then we took it to Omnivore and they said, well, you know, we had great success with the second one and we love it and we love the new one, but we're just not doing anything new right now. It's like, oh man, come on. You know, like that was frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, because here we are, we thought we made a better record, which obviously, again, subjective, but, yeah. But you know, it was 4 years and there was some growth there and the band is more refined and our harmonies are better and there's little things that make it better. But yeah, that was a frustrating moment. So we're like, well, let's just put it out ourselves. And we did that and it's great. And the people that listened to it enjoyed it. And I mean, I don't know what else to do at this point, you know, with stuff like that. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the music industry side can cross over into the music making side. And that can be the frustrating part. You know, it's like, you know, what are we doing this for? Like, what are we really doing this for? Are we doing it to be rock stars? I mean,
yeah.
We've been doing it for, you know, guys like you and I have been doing it for 25 years.
Yeah.
And there's part of us and part of me inside still that like wants that, you know, it's like, I want to be on a big stage and I want the lights and the production. And maybe that's just fuel for the art and you just got to process it in a positive way. And I even like when I'm writing new songs, I'm like, boy, this would sound good with like a huge ass band and an orchestra on stage,
right?
You know, like you just kind of, so you can take those moments and use them as fuel too, I think. And I think it's just, perspective is everything, obviously, like I said, but having those friends that are musicians that I work with, kind of keeping you in check is huge, you know? So I'm grateful for that.
Are you good at sitting with yourself in silence?
In silence?
Yeah. Complete silence. How do you handle moments of complete silence?
I'm pretty bad at that, I think. Yeah. I'm one of, because like nothing's ever silent. Like, you know, I live in Bay City and in the city. And so it's like, you know, cars driving by with their bass or whatever, a loud motorcycle drive by or whatever. And I would rather have the air conditioner on just blocking that out. You know what I mean? So, that's the only way I can kind of sleep because my ears seem to always be on.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Silent, but my parents have a cabin up north and there are moments when I can just kind of sit outside there, but you're also hearing birds chirp and the leaves rustle and all that stuff. So I don't know if that's really silence that you're speaking of, but I can handle that, man. It's relaxing because you do need to turn off. It's like anything in this job, your ears need rest.
Yeah.
And like if you sit at a computer for all day, your eyes need rest. And just like anything else, whatever sense you use, you have to give it a break. So the definition of silence, like I said, might be a static noise for me, but it's still silence. It's still resting my ears and I'm not listening. I'm just, I can turn them off, you know?
Yeah. So you don't have that thing where when it's quiet, all of your doubts come in.
No, those are all, I think those are just all there like constantly. Less and less as I get older.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and just with this thing and having a family and, you know, my perspectives or my, my priorities have shifted immensely. You know, it's like, you know, my family's number one and, you know, my friends and family are number two. and then my job and my work is number three. And it used to be the other way around. You know, my work would be number one. And I think it was kind of unhealthy for me. And so now having that perspective, I used to be like, someone would send me an email at like 7 o'clock and be like, hey, I need you to tweak this one mix. And I would be like, okay, I'll go do it right now. And now I can go, you know what? I'll hit it up in the morning. I'm just chilling right now. And everybody's cool with that. You know, it's like working with people. That's a big important thing. It's like working with the right people. Like, I've had pre-production dinners is what I call them, where you meet a new band or artist and just kind of see what they're like to see if it's a good fit. Right.
Yeah.
And I've had bands where I've loved the music, and then you have dinner with, like, and the guitar player is just a complete tool.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't sit in a room with this guy for, like, have a 30-minute dinner with him, that, let alone make an entire record. And I've turned down jobs because of that reason. So thankfully, working with people that I really respect and admire and get along with is a vital part. And I'm able to kind of pick and choose now, which is nice, where I wasn't, you know, I was taking everything I could get at one point just to kind of get things rolling. So, but that makes it a little easier as well. So, so the self-doubt thing, I think it's always going to be there with us as creatives. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But, I think that it improves over time, but we need that. That was another quote. I can't remember who said it. It's like, I feel most inspired when I feel inferior. Like, and it was a musician, like listening to like Sgt. Pepper
something. Yeah.
And it's like, and then it's just like, wow, that is amazing. I have so much work to do. And then you go do the work, you know? And so I like that too, because I'm still a music fan first. I think that that's important, because that's what inspires me. Like, even like an artist like Billie Eilish, I love her records. I love how dark they are. I love how minimalistic it is. And it's cool. Like, I'm inspired by this 17-year-old teenager from Los Angeles, but you know, but that's awesome. So the fact that I can still draw inspiration and continue to listen, like you said earlier, listening is everything. So thankfully, music is so accessible now, and there's so much good new music. It's amazing to me that people don't give new music a chance. That frustrates me a lot, because there's so much great stuff being made right now. It's such a great time.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm in the same space. There was a period of time, I think, where I was starting to get a little closed off, as people do once they get into their 30s and their 40s, they start getting a little closed off to anything new because it's different.
Right.
But every now and again, if you're open to it, something will come across your ears, and it'll just change the way your brain works, and you go, oh, this is very, very different. I wonder how that works. I've actually discovered a lot of music that I would have dismissed when I was younger, because I had this chip on my shoulder about anything that didn't have, you know, these criteria to them.
Right. Two guitars, bass, and drums. I don't want to hear it.
It's not that, that's not my bag. But I'm completely different now. Like, I gotta be honest with you. I the other day when I was feeling, I was just having an off day, just a completely off day. And sometimes you've got to manufacture your own joy. And I put on disco music and danced around my living room.
That's amazing.
Awesome. It was awesome. And I can't dance. I've never danced. but here we are. Here we are.
But that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all. And that's really the important thing, is coming to the conclusion that if you're open to to joy, if you're open to happiness, which can even come from a place as dark as, say, a Billie Eilish or a Kay Flay or, you know, even some of the hip hop that I listen to now. I mean, Run the Jewels, their last album was really great. And that's not a thing that I think I would have listened to before. But like listening to the different production techniques and the artistry of the wordplay, things like that are pretty fascinating to me, even though they're things that I can't do. It doesn't matter that I can't do it. It definitely inspires me to see what I can do on my own. And it's directed me to make probably some of the most personal work that I've made with some of the best instrumentation that I've done that has absolutely nothing to do with the things I've been listening to, but they're inspiring.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's a great way to put it too, because, you know, it's also a time, there is a lot of great music, but there's also a lot of music that just sounds like the last McDonald's burger thing that was released, you know?
Yes.
And so when an artist comes in and like for the first time, and we're talking about their record.
Yeah.
I always try to say, you know, well, what do you love? Like, what artists do you absolutely love? And they'll say, like, you know, well, I like Wilco, and I like Bob Dylan, and I like, you know, Weezer, and I like this and that and that. And it's like, and I'm like, they're like, why? Do you want to make them sound like that? I'm like, no, I don't want to make them sound like that. I want to make them sound like you, which is all of those things interjected.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, we're just mutts of our own record collections, which is true. And that's awesome. And then like the Billie Eilish thing, it's like, you know, I started using synths a little bit more because I just loved the way they sounded on that record. Well, of course they're on Pink Floyd records and Beatle records, but it just never made them like a dominant thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, this is cool, and I like the way this is very, very forward, and I'm going to make this, that used to be a guitar, you know, for me. It used to be a distorted guitar, and it's like, well, why not have it be an analog, like, mini Moog or something? You know, I don't know. You just kind of get the guts to do things like that because, you know, you want to, like I said, that yard at a time and all that BS that I was spewing earlier, but it is, it's just, but it's also different. So you're not just stuck. Cause I mean, I know people that have made the same record five times over and over again.
And I'm
amazed that they can do that because I would have been bored after the second one.
Right.
You know, like they find a sound and they stick to it. And, but like, you know, my favorite artists are people like Bowie, where no two records are the same. They're completely different, and that's awesome to me. So, you know, I think it's just depending on the type of creative you want to be. You know, if you love just, you know, Tom Petty rock and roll, and you want to do guitar, keys, bass and drums on everything, then if that's what makes you happy, then rock and roll, I'm all for it, you know? So I think it's just a matter of what the person wants to do, you know, that's the big thing. So it's eventually it's their call because it's their music. So I try to, you know, take their what they're thinking in their brain and translate that, you know, like that's kind of my job. So I think the fact that I love so many different styles of music helps me in that, my job in that regard, because you got to be able to pick like, okay, they want the drum sound from this 70s funk record. Okay. I got to think about that. Listen to it, you know, but that's what makes it fun too. It's like, I got to put this puzzle together, but I have no idea what the picture looks like. I just know what the little pieces look like, but hey, it's a challenge and it's fun. So yeah, it's all a matter of just, diving into those influences and getting, but I, like I said, I love audio and I love sounds. And I think that sounds can create, can inspire a part. So like, if you get this gnarly guitar tone, you're going to play shit differently than if you just had this clean little jangly sound, you know? So,
yes. Yeah. 1,000%.
Yeah. So that's important to me. It's like to help the person get the sound they want so they can perform what they want. If that makes sense. Yeah. So it's just all this stuff, like I said, is just over time and experience, I guess. And then just knowing that I have a million more miles to go.
Well, I'm happy to watch as you go those million miles from one mutt to another. Thanks for talking to me today.
Oh man, I was excited when you asked me. I'm honored and grateful. And it's funny because I had no idea what to expect, but I had a good sense that it would just be like two friends BSing about stuff. So it and it felt exactly like that because it was exactly that.
Love greases all the wheels, my friend.
Yep, it sure does, bud. So I appreciate you taking the time and asking me to do this. I'm flattered.
And there you have it. Episode 101 in the can with the great, the charming, the amazing Andy Reid. If you want to get some more Andy Reid in your life, and I know that you do, you can go to reidrecordingcompany.com. You can find his brand new single, Hanging by a Thread, out now on all the streaming platforms. He's on Spotify, he's on iTunes, all of that stuff. You want to get some really awesome sort of Beatles, Elliot Smithy music in your ears? Then go get yourself some Andy Reid. As for me, you can hear my new Robin EP on all of the streaming platforms out now. A real labor of love, Andy mixed and mastered it, and I couldn't thank him enough. But until next time, don't kill yourselves out there.